Greetings, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio on the BBS Network, and we're going to try this again. We had JJ Hertek and Desiree on the show earlier, and we had so much interference, we got every other word. So we're going to try this again, and hopefully we can bring on and bring out this information we've been so desiring to hear. So anyway, let me get through their bio real quick. JJ Hertek, PhD, PhD, and Desiree Hertek, PhD, are social scientists, futurists, and founders of the Academy for Future Science. They were scientific consultants for Sidney Sheldon's bestseller of an alien encounter entitled The Doomsday Conspiracy, working closely with astronaut Gordon Cooper, and have been researchers in the field of ufology for over like 40 years. So they're on the board of directors with FIONS, Friends of the Institute of Noetics, associated with their colleague and late astronaut Edgar Mitchell. JJ Hertek was presenter at the first government disclosure on ET intelligence in Washington, D.C., 1995, when Cosmic Cultures Meet with Dr. John Mack and Dr. Scott Jones. He gave personal briefings to the government in Mexico and encouraged the work of Jaime Maussan in 1970. Through the 80s. He was the first one to give a briefing and detailed description of EBEs, extraterrestrial biological entities, in 1979 to the World Press, El Universal in Mexico City, and was presenter at the first World Congress on OVNIs in Acapulco, Mexico, with Dr. Jan Hynek. Dr. J. Hertek is author of 20 books in 12 languages, including The Keys of Enoch, and with his wife, Desiree, have written numerous books, including The Over-Self Awakening. Dr. Hertek together are recognized for their provocative information that leads to the development of new cosmology. And there's all kinds of stuff in here. They work with the Zulu shaman, Credo Mutwa, and I can't even pronounce these, the Indians in Brazil and a few others. But anyway, there's so much here. I could go on and on. I could be on here for half an hour reading all the amazing things they've done. But without any further ado, I want to bring them on the show. So Dr. Hertek and Desiree, are you with us?
We're with you, and thank you for the great introduction. As you just said, we've been working with the shamans, the Native Americans, the indigenous people throughout the world, all of whom know that there's big changes coming to Mother Earth, and that's why we want to look at these serious questions of climate change, how we can strategize a positive solution, if there is going to be one on the high frontier, and how this relates to the extraterrestrial cosmic cultures, or those from the higher dimensional worlds that our astronauts have seen at a distance and in private conversation have told me life does exist in the greater universe. Now we have to perk up and listen for more information.
Yeah, I think that's so important because many people are concerned when they see things like the volcanoes, the earthquakes. Right now, Indonesia's had a string of earthquakes. Some friends of ours went to go see Angkor Wat, and they go, they're in the midst of earthquakes, actually. So everyone's feeling it out in that area, and we're all feeling it in a certain sense around the world. But what does this really mean? Is this really the end of the world, or is it really the new beginning? Because there seems to be so much coming together at the same time, including contact with other races in space.
Now, I was wondering what's taking place regarding the Earth changes and magnetic fields. Here, we're actually, I take my compass, and I can aim it at Mount Adams. To the right out of Mount Adams is due north. And it's moved all the way to the left side of Mount Adams, 20 degrees, and then back again within 3 days. It's been moving all over the place. So I'm wondering if you could give us any insights as to what's going on with the fields.
Well, I know you're at ESETI, and you know some of that could just be that you're in the middle of a vortex. But I mean, I'll move on from that. But I think some of it is that energy. And the vortexes are opening all over the planet, which is so exciting. But there's a lot going on, as you know. And even off of where you are, there's that axial volcano underground, which is right where that plate comes together with the North American plate, the Plata de Fuca. So there's so much going on. But I think what's really key that we wanted to bring out, especially upon the Earth, is what's called the South Atlantic Anomaly. Now, this is something that started in South Africa, and Dr. Hertek and I, we actually work in South Africa. We have the Academy for Future Science, has a large, nice base in South Africa. And it seems that from that point, because of something, in the core mantle connection, this entire field that goes now all the way from South Africa to Chile, mostly over Brazil, is showing an extremely weak magnetic field. This is really something that even the Hubble telescope doesn't want to go over. When it does, it shuts down some of its equipment because a lot of it is out in space. It's not necessarily touching the Earth. Even the astronauts in the International Space Station, even though they're higher than the field itself, they actually have anomalous things that come out on their computers because of this field. And what it is, it's a very, very weak field. There's no protection there. And many people feel it is, some people feel it isn't, a sign that the North and the South Pole will eventually just alter their magnetic field. So what your compass reads as North, your compass will then read as South. And this has happened many times in the past, usually every 400,000 years, but now we're long overdue. It's 760,000 years since the last time.
Yeah, I remember back in 2007 when I was at the United Nations as a speaker at the conference on climate change and environment. Kofi Annan at that time had mentioned seriously that we had approximately something on the order of 10 to 20 years really to get our act together. And of course, you know, he just passed a few days ago, so I want to honor him with this program. But in talking to serious researchers throughout the world, and at the various summits that Desiree and I participated in 1995, in 2007 in New York City, and of course in South Africa at the summit on GARA sustainability, it was very, very clear that we are on a sliding slope. We have about 30 years, and now it's approximately down to about 15 years, according to our colleagues, to get our act together. So this is serious business. It means we have to look at what our experts have told us, as well as what the indigenous are telling us.
Right, you know, many people say, boy, you know, there's like 400 parts per million CO2 in the atmosphere, and we're seeing it all over the globe. But one of the things they don't know is that the solar flares, and this is all having to do with magnetic fields, the South Atlantic anomaly, and what's happening in the sun, actually, the sun is actually at a minimum. It's almost no solar flares. If there were had been its normal solar flare situation, there would be probably so much more heating of the planet at this point. But it's actually almost like a cold sun. So with our CO2 being higher, we're actually in a little bit of a positive situation, and it could change at any moment.
So there are many documentaries that are coming out. I would like to recommend the books of one of my favorite writers, Dr. Guy McPherson, a evolutionary biologist, ecologist, retired from the University of Arizona, who has written several books, really one entitled Extinction Dialogues, Going Dark, Walking Away from the Empire, and Living with Fire. These are just a few of his leading works. He believes, as I do, that industrial civilization, if it maintains its present course, will cause the extinction of the human race. And he's retired and has gone down to live in Belize, just south of Mexico, because he feels the game is up. The politicians are not listening to the truth.
But we also think there's some positive sides to this. But go ahead, James. I know you have some questions for us.
Well, I know... We've looked at Mars in the past. Mars actually had an advanced civilization on it, and it looks like they've lost their atmosphere and due to some other events. I was curious if you've done a lot of research into that.
Well, yeah, this goes on to the magnetic field. You know, the fact that Mars does not have a strong magnetic field like we do to create these Van Allen belts means that they cannot sustain an atmosphere, which is very, very interesting. So even though some scientists have actually considered terraforming Mars, and this Earth might have been terraformed as well, but it would never be able to sustain the atmosphere in what it has today. Now, we do feel Mars had a civilization in the past.
In the Keys of Enoch, I actually published the first photographs taken by the Mariner 9 probe of Mars in 1971-72. The Mariner 9 B frames, that show these unusual pyramidal formations in the Elysium Quad Triangle. Elysium, of course, was a term coming from the Greek classical traditions, meaning a place of death and a place of the hereafter. This amazing documentation suggests a mathematical grid work, superb architecture, and other details that NASA officials could not explain at that time. Nonetheless, I was able to speak on Australian Good Morning Australia television programs and do a series of programs with some of my ex-NASA colleagues that Mars did lose its atmosphere, either because of a comet that came too close or because of some environmental situation that the Martians at that time were not aware of. In fact, the Zulus of South Africa have told us in their traditions that their ancestors came from Mars during the time of a great upheaval that took place due to temperature.
And they claim that they came in what Elise Credo Mukhtwa says is Maracaiba, which is very similar to Merkaba, the Hebrew word for vehicle. But Mars at one point actually had more water. Now scientists will confirm that at this point. There was more water on Mars than we have on Earth. So all this kind of went away. Some of it probably went underground. That's what scientists are seeing today. But if in order for life to really live there, especially life like us, it would have had to go underground or somewhere else. And it's not impossible for intelligence to go somewhere else. I mean, Elizabeth Klar, who was a very good friend of ours in South Africa, she had a unique encounter with an alien race who looked just like us, but had been living in the South Pole area. And they said because of the solar flares and other things, they actually had to go back to where they came from. And they came from Alpha Centauri, which when she had her experience in the 1950s, no one knew that Alpha Centauri was one of our closest stars, especially habitable type of stars with the planets around it. So she was, I think, right on in what she said.
Well, let me just say, for the sake of the world audience, Elizabeth Klar was a member of British intelligence. She spoke before the House of Lords in the 1970s. She was an invited guest in Germany. I had an opportunity to visit her, and Desiree took pictures of Akon, the ET commander that she interacted with in the Drakensberg area of South Africa. So the introduction to her was very important, because also the Keys of Enoch mentioned the realm of Metone, which she refers to also, Elizabeth, that is, in her writing. So we had something in common, and she was anxious to meet me when I was there in the early 80s. So what we're saying in a practical way, we're dealing with people who are experts who have degrees in planetary science, archaeology, who understand really the information behind the scenes that many powers have kept really private, not to cause, as it were, public angst or emotional distress. We are facing a situation that Kofi Annan at the United Nations, as well as others like Dr. McPherson, and I believe will be, without divine or higher intelligence, helping us, the end game.
But I have to say, in closing maybe of this section about the fields of magnetism, that it seems that not only is intelligence watching us, and they knew about changes that will take place, not only is it not all us, and that's one of the things, I mean, I'm all for everyone getting Tesla cars and everyone going green, but if you look at Mars, you look at Venus, you look at some of the other planets, there still may be some aspects of climate change present in the system. And what's happened now is they've started to see this solar system as not alone in the Milky Way, that there seems to be some large magnetic fields, one that we're moving away from called the dipole repeller, and one we're moving towards, which is also called the shapely concentration. So it seems that we're actually moving in space through these different changes in fields, and they're getting stronger and weaker in different capacities. So we have to realize the magnetic field is not just around this planet, it's not just around the sun, but there's a larger magnetic field that we're all part of and can also share in the entire universe.
Yeah, the Russians have talked a lot about that. They said we're moving through a place in space that's highly energized, where we've never been before that we know of. And they talk about that. And also, too, I have NASA photographs of ships that are as big as the Earth parked right in front of the sun. and they actually expand their fields and block some of the what they the psychics saw were kill shots, you know, coming towards the planet. So we are getting a lot of intervention, and I just hope that continues.
Well, this is some of the information that Jaime Maussan brought out a few years back, where he had Russian film clips showing what exactly you describe. There seems to be a countermeasures in place by some form of extraterrestrial intelligence that is preventing, as it were, the heating up of our planet and other situations of massive bombardment coming from the sun to basically destroy the food sources of the human race.
Right, and I would say even years ago, most people remember this, that there was like a comet coming by, and when it got closer to the sun, it actually exploded, and it wasn't that close. So some people feel that that was also part of the protective energy. And that is what the Keys of Enoch have said, that we're in the midst of a great change for many reasons, not just one singular reason. But, you know, it was predicted, it was known by other levels of intelligence. And that's why they're here to help. And how are they helping? They're giving us advanced information on many levels. In fact, according to the Keys of Enoch, 64 areas of science are being advanced really by implementing higher consciousness into this reality. But then at the same time, and this will now shift to probably our next topic, there seems to be other levels of intelligence, maybe not so pro-humanity, that are also coming into our system. And we believe they're coming for two main reasons. One, like Dan Burch, the intelligence he saw actually needed our help.
Dan Burch, of course, from Area 51, mm-hmm. who was able to speak openly about his experiences of actually interacting with an ET specimen that was a visitor kept under military confinement. The Keys of Enoch, and I am quoting from one section, Key 118, tell us, the change of the electromagnetic density in the Earth's atmosphere will activate some species to become more violent and other species more Christ-like, as man is pulled either into an upper spiral of light, capital L, I mean superluminal light, or negated by the breakdown of the old electromagnetic frequency. This will bring about a complete reorganization of the Earth's life system as the human creation begins to operate with the new magnetic and electromagnetic creative power. In simple language, it means that we're really going into a change of density. The Russians have noticed this also around the moon. They've noticed situations also with all of the planets of our solar system heating up. So this is a situation that far transcends just the industrial sector of temperatures.
But we also feel that some of the local ETs that are living locally may also be being affected. So that means they're trying to find new homes, for one. They also have a certain control system that has to do with more consciousness in our area. So they maybe don't want to lose their positions of power. This is why some of these extraterrestrials are trying to gain more foothold with the consciousness of humanity. And also, if you listen to Linda Mulhall, and we agree with her wholeheartedly on this, that some of them realize that they don't have the soul consciousness mm-hmm. that we do, and that they're trying to figure out how to do that, even by abductions and hybridizing people and things like that. What do you think about that, James? I know you've done some research.
Yeah, we've got the same information that there's some that they just don't have the emotional body. And without the emotions, they can't embrace the higher consciousness and energy, and they're not going to make this shift that's going on. So they're doing a lot of hybrids and hybridization programs and things like that. We've got a lot of information on that. And what I've been seeing, and actually you've stated this a long time ago, that the negative ones would become known first. And I'm curious what your take is on that.
Well, I am simply going to speak now, having talked to researchers throughout the world, having looked at thousands of documents in the databases now being available through what is called government disclosure with contact situations, that there are life forms that have interacted in the past and have tried to nullify the human evolution. And I say this with careful logic. We have to marshal a higher logic of spiritual talent and understanding if we're going to get beyond the negative scenarios, because we don't have to look very far to see in the myths and traditions of all of the major human cultures the fact that there have been visitations and experiments, including that mentioned in the historic book of Enoch, chapter 7, that speaks of the genetic experiments that created giants or individuals that destroy the human race, and as a consequence, divine intervention had to take place.
Right, and this ties into also the book of Genesis in the Bible, chapter 6, where the giants, the sons of God, we'll say, had relationships with the daughters of man.
Referred to as the Nephilim.
And bore these giants. And then right after that, and this is what is picked up more in the book of Enoch, that then the flood came to kind of go back to the original, what we consider the original Adamic species. Now, that's a whole different idea. We don't feel that the Adamic species on this planet, and I know this might be different from many of the people you've already interviewed, but we feel that we come from a higher vibratory structure. We'll talk about that shortly. But that we are really from this higher reality rather than the physical hybrid reality, which is one of the reasons why the ETs really like this planet and want to also play with our DNA. A second reason is that they both the positive and negative ETs, and I won't say negative in the sense because some of them don't even think of themselves as negative. They're only negative because what they want to do with us is negative to us in that sense, you know, but that they both talk to the government, and the positive ones all say, put away your weapons of war and, you know, be peaceful civilizations, and then you can kind of be part of what we do. And the negative one said, just give us some of your people, let us hybridize them, and we'll give you some technology. So, you know, who do you think we've gone through, you know, with first, sadly to say, mostly the negative ones.
Yeah, your question is a good one. And I want to say again for our listeners throughout the world that Desiree and I have looked at the myth behind the myth of the higher science. We have had the privilege of working in South Africa and in many of the South African country areas where we have found footprints of giants. And we showed this documentation in the year 2000 in Vienna, Austria, at the World Conference on Archaeological Anomalies. Later, one of our colleagues from South America had brought a specimen to Switzerland of a heel bone area of a specimen that the Swiss and Germans reconstructed into a being that was back engineered to be approximately 28 to 30 feet in height, which was shown by von Däniken at his center in Interlaken. To the surprise of many social anthropologists, there was a situation in history that there were these interconnections with other evolutionary cultures. So putting this together into a big map, we've seen the world go through climate change many, many times. We've seen the rise and fall of human civilizations, no matter how gifted and erudite. We just have to learn to breathe underwater. We have to learn to sing the psalm of going through the valley of the shadow of death, Psalm 23, with an understanding that those who survived these cataclysms have written the myths, the legends, the scriptures, the text to inspire us at this sector of human history to prepare for what I would consider the quantum leap into the future, where we will be cosmic citizens with all the endowments of those great minds that are spoken of in the ancient texts. We are being tested as to how we can balance our science, our psychology, our philosophy, and the way we treat human beings, and the way, according to the indigenous I talked to, the way we hear the cry of Mother Earth. We do not hear the cry of Mother Earth and see the destruction of the indigenous habitats in South America, in Indonesia, and Africa. We will go the same way into planetary biospheric collapse. The end game is not the end game for us, and that's why I published the Keys of Enoch in 1973. And at that time, I gave the mathematical coordinates of the melting of the ice at the North Pole and at the South Pole. The book was considered to be too far into the future to be taken seriously, but my mathematical calculations and the scenarios have held up, and now Americans, Russians, and German scientists that I've talked to agree with what the Keys of Enoch have forecast.
Right, and he also pinpointed the Isle of Flores, which is where the little hobbit people, the Homo florensis, have been found. So, you know, in addition to us, there was the Homo florensis, there was the Denisovans, there were the Neanderthals. They just found a cave in southern France, and they've dated it now to 170,000 years ago. They can tell some intelligence was there, and they consider it Neanderthal. They also found, as you may know, in San Diego, when they were creating a highway some ancient mastodon bones, but they were placed so arranged that it was obvious that an intelligent life form had done that, and they dated that 120,000 years ago in California. So, you know, there's been a lot of changes. We actually feel there's like over 70 races in space. There was at least 5 or 6 on this planet
alone. Well, before we get to that point, let's look at the roadmap. We have a greater diversity of evolutionary specimens. We have a much larger picture that the ancient text and the artifacts are telling us. That is why we've been working behind the scenes in the jungles of Guatemala, in Brazil, and other places where we've seen areas of climate change that has come suddenly. We have been able to examine huge areas of land that you can see from space using radar systems that show that round circle villages, very large, were simply, shall we say, dissipated because of climate change. Thousands of years ago, we've seen cities underneath Yucatan, that is in the area of Mexico, that suggest that civil engineering using hydraulic systems, water hydraulics, to feed major population centers with fresh water. How did this all take place? It means that there, at one time, were much larger human communities that were not prepared for these sudden changes. So the bottom line here is we must be prepared with the measurements of the past that are now coming into public knowledge.
I know they just found some kind of I think it was a clay scroll or something that had some pretty advanced math in it that they couldn't figure out until they got one of the best mathematicians here on the planet. And when he got through, he said, you know, this is trigonometry times 10, you know, so, and it actually answered a lot of the questions. And so they're finding these things that show without a doubt that there have been extremely advanced people here on Earth before. And I know the Gosford Glyphs, I believe you've been there too as well. I went there with some Aboriginal people and also Stephen and Evan Strong. And, you know, the glyphs there tell most of the history of Earth. And without a doubt, I guess you pronounce it, I always call it Denisovian man, but I think there's another way you pronounce it a little differently. It actually shows a ship coming down, adding their DNA to the existing man that was already here. And it tells a whole story about the pharaohs and that their gold actually came from Ballarat, from Australia, the Egyptian gold. So a lot of things actually started in Australia, and from there it went to Africa. But in reading this whole historical account and the pharaohs returning and everything else, it's amazing when you look at this. And I've always believed that a lot of the ETs are coming here because we have the DNA of the gods, the ancient ones, and that's basically what they're after, some of them.
Well, if we take the lessons of scripture, that is to say, in the Western world, the foundation of the book of Genesis, as it is called by the ancients, the Bereshit tells us that we were made out of the image and similitude of the Elohim or the Godhead. And so there would be a certain logic that we are a unique specimen. And in my higher consciousness experience in 1973 with altered terrestrial life forms, it was clear that we are part of an evolution experiment. And we have to sift through all of these possibilities. Again, this may seem like PhD to the fourth power. You have to go to all the universities, get all the roadmaps, get all of the architectural artifacts and put them in the chronological order. But I think we're being given tremendous breakthroughs in the areas of new knowledge. And thanks to the internet, we're going to be able to have virtual universities and programs where much of this will be more functional as we put the information out for people to see the big picture of how science, sociology, and spirituality converge. Desiree and I are just publishing a book called Giza's Industrial Complex, Ancient Egypt's Electrical Power and Gas Generating Systems.
With a good friend of ours named James Brown.
Where we show underground areas where we've worked under the sands of Egypt in terms of water hydraulics. We've mapped the whole systems. In fact, we were the first to find the tomb of Osiris that Zahi Hawass took credit for in 1999 when he said at the end of the Fox News cast, oh, incidentally, there was a group 2 years before that was here. That was our archaeological team, and we were not given permission to do the archaeological work under the ground at any great depth. Nonetheless, we were down over 110 feet working with lasers, with remote sensing equipment, and we came across some very interesting things that we're going to be publishing in this book. So we will be now coming out with film documentation knowledge of acoustical physics that we've been using, knowledge of the various specialists using remote sensing and ground penetrating radar, to show that it's taken us 40 years to put together this picture in chronology, that the Bible begins with the story of life, and then it goes to Egypt, then it goes to the Exodus. And that, in our language, is a type of metaphor for our planetary exodus into the higher worlds once we cross the Red Sea, which is our solar spectrum. So we have to come out of the economic pyramids of control that are the industrial power systems of the world that have violated the cosmic contact.
And that comes now to the idea of the other extraterrestrials that are visiting the planet, and why are they here? And I think you're right that many of them actually are cosmic cousins. And I always say in programs that, you know, it might be, you know, unusual to find a little green man on Mars or somewhere else, but it's even more unusual to find us on other planets. And that's exactly what Elizabeth Klar and even Dr. Hudak's own experiences, not in terms of extraterrestrial, but in terms of ultra-terrestrial, saw, is that we are really cosmic beings. And there are many Adamic species on other planets. And they're concerned also about us. We're one of those colonies that's been out here for a while. In a sense, it's good that we kind of were left to our own devices, because otherwise we may be influenced by, without the discernment to understand the various races in space. But there is a galactic brotherhood and sisterhood.
Let me read again from the Keys of Enoch, published in 1973, section or key 316. From the firmament, the brotherhoods receive the whole light beings who come in the appearance of man with quantum mechanical corpuscles of light or sparks of higher light.
Or light bodies.
And move in the midst of man by gravitational flux line controls. So that they who will see will see. The brotherhoods come and return in the flash of light. Now the keys speak of gravitational waves for communication. And they go into great scientific detail. But as you know, in the last couple of years, a lot of emphasis has been placed upon gravitational waves, the work of Einstein. But the keys have refined this to mean also that there's a whole matrix here that deals with movements of how minds work and connect in different levels of evolution.
And also that some people are really attuned to this, whether it's by their consciousness or just their circumstance at the time, that they are, you know, aware, and they start seeing whether it's extraterrestrial intelligence ships. I'm sure people see that all the time at ESETI. Or whether it's also light beings that appear in their midst. I mean, many people have had these experiences now, especially young people are getting the experience first. And then I say, then they start knocking on doors, finding out exactly, you know, what it's all about.
So these beings of light could be called ultra-terrestrials because they're not dependent upon technology or the lower physics. They are working with consciousness, and they have the ability to use the power of their mind to create and to actually go beyond the physical and biological sciences as we currently define them. Consciousness is really the area that we find most interesting. And again, I'm going to mention a book that we just published with Elizabeth Rauscher from Stanford Research Institute. The work goes back in the 1970s, where our U.S. government studied with some of the best minds in the world the power of mind over matter and the communication that we had going around the world to see things under the ground thousands of miles away. Even the work connected with astronaut Mitchell, when he was an Apollo 14 astronaut, he was able to take off his space gear and mentally communicate with two biological contact subjects that he arranged to contact with on Earth. So we're in a tremendous sense of utilizing the mental and the spiritual skills that the ancient prophets, mystics, and poets speak of. We are going into the future, and we must activate this higher nature, supernature, if you will, of our mind, our body, and our heart if we're going to survive.
I know the Merkaba video that you did, it blew my mind when I saw that. And I already drew pictures of my interactions with Malia with the Orion Council of Light. And when I saw that picture of one of the beings in there that was tied to Orion, I just went, oh, my God. I mean, it just floored me. And I know that there's a lot of, I wanted to cover this quickly, but there's a lot of bad press about the Orion system. There's all these people saying that they're all grays and reptilians and it's all negative and things like that. I'd like to get your take on that.
I'm going to start and then let Dr. Hudak finish. Actually, we agree that They are incorrect. Of course, Orion is a huge system, but the main stars, the three stars in the belt, and also the main stars that we see, especially connected with Safe and some of the Betelgeuse
Rigel.
And Rigel and Betelgeuse, some of these stars are creating the vortex, according to Dr. Hertak.
Or the shape of a man in the sky.
But according to Dr. Hertak, actually, the three stars in that area actually create a vortex to get us out of the 3/4 dimensional reality into, it's a portal, in other words, it's a stargate into other realities, higher dimensions. And the higher beings can use that. And you can see why any of the vortex points on the Earth, there tends to be, we'll say, not only confusion, but also in some cases, a little bit of a warring against. Look, if you take the Middle East as a vortex point, I mean, obviously a problem there. If you take the area around Tibet and Kashmir, obviously a problem there. So these are major vortexes.
So each constellation is made up of billions of stars. So there's good and bad amongst all races, all nations, and in the universe.
But the heart of Orion is of the light.
Is the very important situation I would like to emphasize, because it stands out in the keys of Enoch. It's focusing our attention on the sacred centers around the world, many of which are aligned in their own logic and astronomy and mathematics with the three stars in the belt of Orion, the ancient Arab historians called Mintaka, Anultaka, and Analam, and the Greek philosophers also delineated, as well as the Egyptians. And so we were the first to point out in our work in Egypt with the star shafts in the Great Pyramid, the alignments of the southern star shaft with the three stars in the belt of Orion. Think of this huge mountain of stone, 13 acres of 2.5 million ton blocks, plus of stoneware being assembled and having small stargates inside that point precisely to the three stars in the belt of Orion in terms of the southern shaft.
And what's interesting is the Mayans also recognize Orion as connected to the father figure. So in Dr. Hertak's experience, which took place in 1973, basically he was taken in a beam of light, not a light ship in that sense. It wasn't a UFO. And he was asked if he was ready. He was taken a beam of light. But when he went through the local areas, there was this, he could feel and see and hear some of the negative thought forms that he was crossing over to. And then he was actually taken to the area of Orion and through the three stars of the belt. And then when he went beyond that, his physical body couldn't go anymore, and his light body went, and he connected from Enoch to Metatron. So this is the essence.
Put this into practical language, is the Great Pyramid is the center of a calendar system that connects all other calendar systems, looking to what we call the master gateway to the parent universe that's beyond our local system, our local physical universe. What we're seeing in through spiritual logic, and those who have had the opportunity to have higher mystical experiences, is the fact that we're all interconnected with the universal mind that has shown us in the historic literature and the historic diaspora of the various cultures of science and spirituality that there is a timing in the cosmic oscillations and the cosmic movements of the spheres. So we are at a time really now of being able to listen to the music of the spheres, to see interdynamic relationships through higher states of consciousness, to map out these ancient pyramids as astrophysical computers, and to realize that we are being told where the databases of ancient information will be found, that if properly understood will unify the human race, so we as a humanity can graduate, whether we want to use scientific logic or metaphorical spiritual logic. The point is we're going to be shifting our consciousness in a dramatic way, which requires us to activate a higher consciousness and not be preoccupied with negativity.
Right, and his experience in 1973, which has been published since the 70s, he not only talks about the pyramid and the star shaft pointing to Orion and the significance of Orion and all that we've said tonight, but he also points out that the Pleiades, now it's a popular constellation now and many people talk about it, but he had this back in the 70s, was a place, literally the cradle and throne for the Adamic species, and that really the codes of who we are coded from the energy that came from Orion and is connected with Orion and the Pleiades together, all connected with the Taurus constellation as well as Orion, encoding the Adamic species. Now, we believe that we are really originally light consciousness beings. And most of the universe is functioning on a consciousness level first. And
a very elementary consciousness level.
No, and a physical reality second.
According to Aldous Huxley, we are just working with just drops of consciousness. And Desiree, you said a lot, but to put this into brass tacks, we have to tell the audience that when the Japanese and Australian underwater divers that we were working with went down to the bottom of the ocean near Yonaguni, they found Taurus-like temple constructs on the bottom of the ocean, which showed that at one time there was a superior society above land, and with the climate changes that took place around 10, 12,000 years ago, the ocean dynamics began to change. The waters rose, and many of these ancient temples and pyramid-like structures are still there for us to be found. That's part of the map that we've been following over the last 45 years.
But the missing element here is the Mayans actually saw Orion, especially the lower stars connected with Safe and the three stars, and as a turtle shell or a turtle figure. So there's definitely, as you were saying, whether you look at Australia or we look at the Taklamakan Basin, which is northern Tibet and currently China, as being the housing for some of the original, we'll say, higher intelligence that came upon the planet. Again, there were many races on this planet. We just kind of went out at the end.
So we've been doing underwater probes into 16 different areas of the South Pacific. And as you know, Graham Hancock has been also another investigator in this series. He wanted to get your views on how this connects us with upstairs, because we see all of these civilizations giving us, in their alignments to the stars, a whole different direction of the human evolution, that we are star-born, we are here, and the brotherhoods of light are now sustaining us through our hearts, our understanding of the deeper nature of Mother Earth.
And the sisterhoods as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the I've noticed one thing that the Adamic archetype, you might say, seems to go not just throughout the galaxy, but through other dimensions as well. We keep seeing that with a lot of the contacts that people are having. And as you move up that vibrational continuum and start experiencing these other dimensions, the life is so diverse on these things. And I've always felt that Earth is just a massive, like a massive intergalactic zoo, you might say, because it seems like so many different beings have added their biological DNA to the Earth, both plant, animal, and human. But there also seems to be a much bigger picture going on as well. It seems to be like a massive ascension chamber here where the bravest of angels come, you know, to test their wares or whatever. But I mean, there's so many different things going on, but I have noticed that some of these beings, and I've met some of the Orion Council of Light, those beings, they look human. They look very much like we do. They're bigger, a little taller, you know, but very beautiful beings. But the energy emanating from them and the Pleiadians and the energy coming off them, you just feel that pure love and that joy and that bliss. And
yes, Desiree, I've also experienced this. And it's very important to recognize that there is this overlap now taking place between those higher forms of beings, the ultra-terrestrials, the humans.
Go ahead, James. But that's why we've appreciated always your work and what you're doing at ESETI, because I know you actually do see the picture that we see, which is really amazing. I just want to hear a little bit more about that.
Yeah, we're having, I've seen also two archetypes, like they'd be part human and part like the feline beings. You know, some are humanoid cat-like beings, and some are actually human lion beings. And I've had these beings appear to me, and then I'd have to go do the research and find out in India, they call them Narissa and Narsringa, and Sekhmet, you know, in Egypt and things like that. And these beings actually did exist, and some were the protectors of the gods, and some of the gods fell, and they said, well, you've broken universal law, so we're out of here, you know, and they went back to their home worlds. But there's so much information coming in right now, and I always do things kind of backwards. I have the experience, I meet the beings, and then I do the research, and I find out it's validated almost every time. And it's also validated in the work that you're doing. But I mean, you've been pioneering this since since the 70s. And I know I started getting into this back, I'd say the very early 80s, you know, well about 78 to the 80s when I started having all these experiences. And I didn't write about them until about 82. But it's kind of interesting, the books that we've worked on are now, when you read them, people read them now and they go, holy, whatever. They go, this is happening now, you know.
Exactly. And, well, we're like on Schoolhouse Earth. You were saying, you know, how important is Earth? Well, it really is a place where we can experience higher consciousness, awareness, understanding, compassion, and love, working together, because and making a difference to this area of the universe. But I have to say the same with the Keys of Enoch. You know, a lot of people, I've sat in many lectures and, of course, the book tables as well. And people go, oh, yeah, I have that book, you know, but I didn't understand it. And I go, yeah, go back now, you know. And
yeah.
They totally get it. I mean, it's just, we have actually evolved so far in the last 30 to 40 years that, you know, people are starting to understand that we really are cosmic beings. They are having the experiences that you had and Dr. Hertak had in the 70s
and
80s.
Well, this is why human language is not sufficient. You have to have pictographic language. And this is why our new books are illustrated by a very famous artist to show the multidimensionality of how we think in pictures, sacred geometries. We use certain sounds to see holistically the worldview as a holistic process that we're going through. Again, the Keys of Enoch tell us, in the overall creation, soul and advancement can proceed in these new star universes, overcoming anew only if the soul has cultivated the energy to go on. The insufficient psyche without soul development, however, is not destroyed, but as a drop fallen into a vast ocean of light, is returned to the new primeval eons, where the more painful task of meta-creation must now begin anew in their own way.
Right, and so that's why we encourage meditation, which I know you do on a regular basis, and we encourage that for all the audience, as a way to become more aware and to also accept. And I know many people who listen to your program are probably all kind of, we'll say, believers, you know, speaking to the choir, but in actuality, for those who don't, you know, that's what blocks your consciousness. If you don't think extraterrestrials exist, then you don't see the possibilities. If you don't think you have a higher consciousness, then you won't experience that. You have to take that first mental, rational, you know, beyond our logical mind to say there is something greater. There is something more vast. And we probably are cosmic beings. And as far as we're concerned, we are constantly being helped and guided by these other levels of intelligence. We call them ultra-terrestrials. Others call them angelic realms. And in some cases, for some people, it is even extraterrestrial realms who are helping these people to get a greater grasp on who they are.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, we all live in this unified field of consciousness and energy. And there's some beings that are actually just utilizing more of that field. They're more connected with more of that field. And I know when you try to explain this, you can do it through physics and quantum physics and things like that. It's very easy to explain. But when you get back to the religious aspect of it, and that people are locked in that duality, like everything is either positive or negative, or the devil or God or things like that. I know you probably had to deal with this quite a bit. It seems like all of these other things we're talking about right now are replete throughout the Bible and other sacred texts. I'm just curious if you had some insights into that, on how to kind of guide people to say, okay, go check out this, you know?
Well, once they start having experiences, and it really does boil down to having that experience, that inner knowing, that awareness that comes directly for the individual, that no one can really give them that. But we've worked a lot with remote viewing, and, you know, there's some great remote viewers, Pat Price, Ingo Swann in the past, Helen Hammond. Mm-hmm. But actually what Russell Targ will tell you is that everybody has the ability to remote view. And I tell people, you know, before you even pick up your cell phone, figure out who's calling you before you even look. And you start training yourself, and you start realizing, as you said, it's all interconnected. We can know, we can see, we can heal, we can pray, we can meditate, and reach any aspect or any place in the universe, and I would even say beyond the universe.
And this is why Desiree and I put out these films that you have experienced, called the Merkaba, Voyage of a Starseed in the Light Body, so that people can actually, in a manner of a couple hours, swim in hyperspace or feel the energies of working with multidimensional forms of energy. So this is part of what I will call the teaching platform we extend to all of you to go to our website, keysofenoch.org, and scroll down to our videos. Many of them have won international awards as DVDs and CDs. We've worked with leading musicians throughout the world who put music to work so that we are able to raise, as it were, our chakras or energy centers. The ancient scriptures called the seven seals, to open those into the higher glory of what John the Divine speaks of when he thinks and speaks symbolically of how the heavens and the earth will converge.
But there really is no separation. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I know you have so much of this on your... Is the best way to contact you, is it through the Academy of Future Science? Or what's the best... to get access to all this.
Yeah, no, keysofenoch.org, and on there, there's an extensive catalog. And, you know, what we were talking about tonight with Key 4, is also Key 402, or the second light picture superscript, about how our genetic code is really from a higher light energy. I mean, if you look at every little aspect, and we worked with a Russian scientist named Peter Gurayev, and he'll say that he's working with light DNA, so to speak. In other words, that the codes for DNA actually come from a light frequency. And they kind of look like light wavelengths coming down. And they just simply concretize into this 3/4 dimensional reality. But really, they come from a 5th, 6th, 7th, even 8th dimensional reality. And working with Elizabeth Rauscher, she feels that even our consciousness is constantly working in an 8th dimensional reality. And there was research recently done in Switzerland called the Blue Brain Project. Mm-hmm. And they've seen how, even in mice brains, that geometries that are being triggered in our brain are multidimensional. So we're not really three-dimensional at all. And one can see that of how we can affect other realities, how we can know past, present, and future if we just tune into it, if we allow ourselves to be who we are. And that's how the ETs work. I think that's the key to get across.
And it's also the UTs, the ultra-terrestrials.
Yeah, well, that's where they come from. But basically, the ETs are all working mostly with consciousness thought. They all can read our minds. They all know exactly where you are and what you're thinking. So you don't need Big Brother. You got ETs. But it's all a matter of consciousness. It's not a matter of technology for them.
Yeah, they pull more out of the field. You know, they have, you know, all their sacred senses are activated. You know, they have clairvoyance, clairsentience, clairaudient, all that is activated. And they're just using more of the unified field than we're accessing.
Exactly right. And this is what we're emphasizing through the Academy, the raising of consciousness.
So we can do the same.
Mm-hmm.
This is why we call our organization the Academy for Future Science, because future science is science guided by consciousness. With science of the higher mind, of the higher spirit, we have these gifts of remote viewing, remote sensing, remote healing, the ability to reach out and to redefine the whole evolutionary DNA so we can reprogram ourselves in cooperation with the divine spirit. We begin to see the marvelous meaning of these ancient words and the ancient text, in fact, even the lost scriptures. They go with the Old and New Testament. We've been trained in ancient languages, and so Desiree and I have made available literally scores of cassettes that go into these important scriptures that if you re-examine them, you understand what the great apostle speaks of putting on the higher mind of Christ. The Christ or the anointed consciousness works with the house of many mansions.
Right, and the house of many mansions is also mentioned in a book we did a commentary to called the Pistosophia, which is supposedly about words from Jesus after his resurrection, coming back and talking to his disciples and telling them about who we are and what the heavens around us are all about.
So we're in a very important process here of choosing to take the Great Leap backwards thousands of years by looking only at industrial pollution and seeing the lower political game as the sole ways and means, or we can take the Great Leap forward into the future by understanding the higher vibratory process of evolutionary biology, the way we think, the way we can reprogram ourselves and understand the mystery of God's sacred language or sacred pronouncements that the original prophets and apostles used for miracles. So there's a whole new language of light. It's a synthesis of science and spirituality. The two sides of the human experience must come together.
And we think we're waking up at this time to who we really are. as divine consciousness beings who can travel in the universe, whether it's from an extraterrestrial reality or an interterrestrial journey. This is our possibility. We are so much greater than we think we are, and then certainly than we're told that we are. And the more and more we start developing our consciousness reality, the more we will understand that.
I read again from Keys of Enoch, Key 118, verse 49. Enoch explained that God's plan has no end. Even throughout our local universe, life continues to recreate itself. Man is doomed to perfection. And when you realize this, you will understand why the Father's house has many mansions.
But I have to just add that we have to be peaceful in what we're doing. We have to share compassion and love, because otherwise we're going to be stuck in the local universe, because that's where those conscious, you know, negative thought forms are. If we want to get into the higher consciousness realms, we have to.
And
really,
as Desiree said, there's an identity of connecting our evolution with those who look like us, because we vibrate according to a higher vibratory plan of biology. And this is the whole fusion process now. The great age is the age of synthesis between music, art, science, and higher spirituality, where we become the way showers. We become what the ancient Greek Christians called the Christophoroi, the bearers of the higher message of the Christ.
The greater love, the greater compassion, the greater understanding.
And as such, we began to be the way showers to interact with the higher hierarchies, or the angelic ultra-terrestrial realm,
which are attracted to us because of our consciousness of love and understanding.
So wake up, humanity, smell the coffee, understand the great movement that will be part of the ascension process.
It's an internal. Oh, go ahead.
Astra, from the internal to the external, they combine in unity.
Yeah, I always tell people it's an internal experience. All the external stuff seems to be a distraction, and there's so much of it right now. And contact comes with enlightenment. And the more you do your spiritual practices, your meditation, you release the past and heal the wounds and traumas and wrong conclusions. And the more you operate under universal law, which is basic universal peace and brother, sister, love, and individual freedom and prosperity for everybody, the more you operate on those levels of consciousness, the more you're going to connect with the greater consciousness. And that does include the higher dimensional beings and the spiritually and technologically advanced, you know, off-world visitors.
Very well said. We agree with this. We agree that this is a time that we need to work closer together to align the human race, and to use an old biblical expression, to see how the humanity, the tribes of humanity, are being gathered in the process of the greater harvesting.
But nevertheless, things are being shaken up. People are being shaken up. But hopefully it leads them to look for a higher awareness of who they really are.
So please reach out to us through the Keys of Enoch in this new edition. A book we've done also with the famous scientist, Elizabeth Rauscher, called Mind Dynamics.
Right,
Of our new book called Giza's Industrial Complex.
Around Christmas time, yeah.
And be aware that we have also books on musical linguistics that go into every sacred name we found in the sacred scripture, explaining this in 7 different languages according to the ancient phonetics, the ancient use of visualization, and also the use of contemporary music experience to expand our heart, to expand our mind together in this great marriage we have with the cosmic Christ.
Awesome. Hey, you know, I can't thank you. Unfortunately, we're out of time. I'm going to have to get you on another show, because I know that we've touched the tip of the iceberg. There's so much more information to bring out. But again, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show and sharing your wisdom and knowledge, and keep up the great work. And I'm sure we'll all be working together in the future.
And thank you for your great work also up there, as your place is really a beehive of great experience for those who have the opportunity to make a small journey or pilgrimage to your part of North America. It would be certainly an experience, providing insights into what we've just covered briefly as the capstone to a much greater knowledge that we represent throughout the world. May we all be blessed.
Thank you, James.
All right. Thank you so much, JJ and Desiree. And again, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, and have a great evening.
Same to everyone. Ad Astra to the stars.
All right. All right, this is James Gunn with As You Wish Talk Radio signing off. Have a great evening. You know, keep that intent pure. Keep an open mind, loving heart, and do your practices, you know, clear out those old wounds and traumas and wrong conclusions. Rise to the occasion. Contact comes from within. Anyway, have a great evening. Good night.